All right, lots going on. Tons going on. Great football weekend, light up night, all that. But let's concentrate on the football weekend. Let me welcome in our sports director, as we do Friday a lot. Jeff Hathorn joins right now. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Colin.
Don't worry about the high school games. I'm going to talk to Austin Bechtold about that a little bit later on this hour because he's kicking around the office. How about that? So you're off the hook for that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
He's putting in he's hosting again because, one shift wasn't enough for him.
Yeah, certainly. So he's all over the place. So apparently he's in here. So I'm going to grab him towards the end of the hour and towards the end of my week. So let's start with – how about we start with Aaron Rodgers' health? I saw some people – I'll just say it. Ray Fittipaldo, a wonderful friend of both of ours and a very kind man. I think I saw him put out there that he puts it at about 65-35 to the yes. Is that accurate? Where do you have it?
So I had it at 60-30 before today's practice. After today's practice, I'm going 80-20 that Rodgers plays. He was out there limited, but what Mike Tomlin was saying about it, just looking, there's some video on our sister station, 93.7 The Fan, of his brace that he was wearing, and he didn't seem to be having any problems. Now, all that being said, the reps he's going through, it's not like he's getting hit. I think that's going to be the thing. I think he'll start, and then it's when he takes that first hit, and not just that there's a hit on the hand, but a hit where he falls down and has to brace himself, how does that recover? How can he tolerate that pain, or can he play through it and still have a good grip on the football? And there's a piece in the video where he's from practice today where he's grabbing the ball, the football, with his left hand and seemed to have no issue, grabbing it. So I think Aaron Rodgers is going to play Sunday.
Could they, and we saw this with Ben at times when he was banged up, which was seemingly always, could they go more pistol or shotgun to offset him getting wear and tear on that hand and being under center?
Now, I just want to be clear, Aaron does not have a fever of 105.
Or broken toes.
No. They can do not just the shotgun, but they have the formation called a pistol, where it's basically the running back's behind you and you're just a couple of yards behind the center, where you're not having that force of the football coming into your hand. And remember, too, if you think about it, so the right hand's on top, the left hand's underneath. There's a little jarring, but where the break is on top of the wrist. So it's even if he goes under center, it's not horrible considering where the injury occurred.
Gotcha. Okay, so that works. The Bears, do they serve as a formidable challenge, or is this a Steelers team that you look at should win this football game?
Bears have 7 wins, but they haven't really beaten anybody.
Right.
But they've won the games they've needed to. They're very much like the Steelers. When they get turnovers, they win games. When they don't, they either struggle to win or don't win. It's odd, the similarities defensively. They both give up some yardage, but when they're on and they're turning people over, they're very tough. Now, injuries are an issue for the Bears. All 3 of their starting linebackers are out for Sunday, including Tremaine Edmonds, who has 89 tackles this year, probably heading towards a Pro Bowl-type season. He's not going to play, so the Steelers get that advantage coming up on Sunday.
Jeff Hathorn joining our sports director. Pitt in Atlanta, Georgia Tech. This is when it gets serious. Number 16, Georgia Tech. Pitt is squarely in the can't lose again category, correct?
Yeah, if they lose again, they have no chance at an ACC title, and probably their chances of going to a desirable, and what I mean by desirable is something warm, bowl, are probably out the window. So this is a monster game for them and a big challenge. Georgia Tech is another team. I don't know that their schedule has been that challenging, but they found ways to win games. They needed a field goal at the end of the game to win at Boston College, who had 1 win on the season. So they're not invincible. It's just going to take Pitt's best effort because it's senior day down there. They're ramped up, and they know if they win this game, they're in the ACC title game.
Is much been made? Is it true? Is it not true? Is it somewhere in the middle? Is there an icy relationship between Pat Narduzzi and Brent Key or not?
I don't think there. Listening to each coach praise the other, I think they're very similar. And sometimes when you have 2 people that are similar in personalities, they may not like each other very much because they both, you know the buttons to push, and they probably push each other's buttons. But it's a very similar team. Like, they're both aggressive. They both bring it. They both do more in practice than most teams do. They're old school. I don't know that there's a tenuous, big story, icy relationship. I just think they're two coaches that are similar, and sometimes they probably rub each other the wrong way.
You've covered the ACC since Pitt's inception, since Pitt was kind of invited into and made the move to the ACC. Have you found it that it's hard or it's easy for – do you think, in your opinion here, it'd be hard or easy to succeed as Georgia Tech plopped squarely in the middle of SEC, deep in the middle of SEC territory?
You mean for them to survive in the SEC?
No, for them to survive just as a program and have success as they're an urban school in SEC territory.
Yeah, and we know both of our former bosses went down to Atlanta and started a radio station, or was part of a radio station there, and he said the numbers for Georgia football are monstrous in Atlanta. Like, they're the team, bigger than the Falcons
right.
in terms of following. So, yes. I mean, you're always being the little brother, if you will, if you're Georgia Tech. But last year, they played an epic game that Georgia barely pulled out. I think Brent has done a great job of recruiting the type of kids. Again, kind of a Narduzzi thing. Haynes King, the quarterback, probably isn't going to go to most of the big schools. But he found a way to use him, and he's rushed for over 800 yards. You wouldn't see that in other systems. But they took what they had and made the best of it. And I think that's what you have to do at Georgia Tech, because you're never going to be bigger than Georgia. It's just not going to happen. But they found a niche, and they're having a year. I don't know how many years they're going to compete for a potential ACC title. This might be it over his span, but they've got the best opportunity right now in the division other than Virginia.
About 30 seconds left. Back to the Steelers real quick. Can they keep winning football games like they won last week? Can they win them on the back of their defense?
They need to win them on the back of their defense, because their offense has some question marks. And obviously with the injury in this game, that's a major thing. But that's why you spend all the money on the defense, to have your defense win you games. What they need to do, though, is when they're not getting the turnovers, be stout enough. And we haven't seen that from this team. So if they're not getting turnovers, can they limit teams in other ways? They really haven't this year. Will they be able to going forward?
Jeff Hathorn. Jeff, I thank you so very much. Enjoy your fun-filled weekend. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Colin.
Absolutely. Jeff Hathorn, my guy. He's spectacular. Good stuff from him. I will catch up with Austin Bechtold. He's covering the high school championship games. You can hear right here, KDK Radio, all day tomorrow. I'll catch up with him before the end of the show. I know he's kicking around the office here somewhere, so we will do that. All right, so they're already making fixes at the airport. Well, I guess now's a good time before you get too deep. Incredible headline by Andy Lindberg on our KDK Radio website. Immaculate correction. Pretty good stuff. So Josh Yoey was the first one to put this out there, and I saw it this morning when I got up. I saw it at about 10 minutes after 4 this morning, and Josh Yoey had put it out there. This esteemed hockey writer. So, the brand new Pittsburgh International Airport terminal, it opened last week. And things went as smoothly as possible, but there's a big mistake quickly noticed after the airport opened its doors. Frank O'Hara statue at the airport reenacting the Immaculate Reception. It got its own little area. But the typo that's out there, the score painted on the wall, Steelers 12, Raiders 7. No, it was 13-7. And here's the thing. The statue of Harris has him catching the ball. At the time he caught the ball, it was actually 7-6 Raiders, if you want to get technical about it. Serious, because he had not crossed the goal line yet. He was in the act of catching the ball after it bounced off a Raider. And so then he goes in. That makes it 12-7. Then Jarella kicked the extra point. That made it 13-7. Was there like 18 seconds left or something like that? So anyway, nonetheless, if they were trying to go for the final score, it was 13-7, which is probably what they were trying to go for. But nonetheless, on the wall, they put Steelers 12, Raiders 7. There's no way that they thought, they just screwed up. Well, enter Andy Lindberg, who calls out and gave the airport a bunch of guff because he's the best. But he killed him with kindness because he's the nicest guy in the world. He was kind of like, hey, did you happen to notice that thing? We're getting a lot of calls here. Bobby Kurlick, also nice guy, like super nice guy. Public affairs director with the airport. He told KDK Radio, that's us, the current background is meant to be a collage of several moments in time depicting the Immaculate Reception. But Kurlick did concede. We know the details are important to Pittsburghers, and in order to make the background clear, we're going to adjust the clock and depict how much time was left when Franco scored prior to the extra point and other adjustments as needed. So the Franco Harris statue is made possible through a partnership between the airport and the Heinz History Center. And so there is that. I'm just glad that the Harris statue is there. It has its own kind of area. Now, there's a bigger discussion. I'll say it real quietly because I know it might be unpopular. Although it may be popular, I don't know, for people who have seen this. I kind of think the whole exhibit's ugly. Like, this is going to sound weird. It's too artsy. They needed to just be like straight ahead football-y with it at the airport. It's kind of too, they tried to be too artsy with it. But even as such, get the numbers right. So there we are. But good on the airport for fixing it. Maybe the same person can fix it who fixed the Michael Keaton Walk of Fame thing. That would work. Or maybe we could do it real Pittsburgh and just like put a piece of tape up and draw the new number right on it. There's your fix. We fixed it. Did it real cheap. So there's that. Anyway, I'll talk to Austin Bechtold in a little bit. He's got the rundown on all the high school games. It's going to be really crowded down there tomorrow. Light up night, high school games, everything going on. So there's that. You may have fun there. Tomorrow, a lot of people headed to Acrisure Stadium. 4 football games. We're covering them all. KDK Radio, tune in. I don't know, just when you wake up, put the radio on. So there's that. Austin Bechtold is part of our coverage team. He covers everything. He's on the field. He's doing this. He's doing that. And I saw him kicking around the office, so I'm going to talk to him about this because I know a little bit, and that's going to be part of the shtick. Hi, Austin. How are you?
Good to see you, Colin.
Great to see you. What I'm going to do is go over these games.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you what I know.
Okay.
It may be comedic for you. And you're going to tell me exactly what we should know. So the first game is Clairton Laurel, right?
Yes.
Okay, here's what I know about Clairton. I know that Tom Nola is not the coach anymore at Clairton.
Correct. It's Wayne Wade.
Oh, it's Wayne Wade?
Yeah, Wayne Wade Jr. is the coach.
Wayne Wade was a really good athlete.
Yeah.
So it's Wayne Wade and Laurel. What do I know about Laurel's way up there in Newcastle. Laurel has to be probably... And they just beat Fort Cherry, right?
They did, and okay. That was the upset of entire Whipfield football. McKeesport losing, obviously, was a big one to Aliquippa, but Matt Siggett, Fort Cherry, who now has all the records, basically has broken all of Pryor's and any record that was standing, passing, rushing, eliminated.
So he's done.
He's done. And now where he's going to go to college, nobody knows either because he was committed to Penn State. He still is committed to Penn State. But still reviewing some of his options.
So Clairton and Laurel is that Class A game, that first game. So that'll be tons of fun. So then after that is what? Seton LaSalle and Steel Valley?
Yeah, Seton LaSalle and Steel Valley. Steel Valley, Dayron Barksdale is their star running back.
I'm going to tell you what I know about this
matchup. What
do you know? Ray Brazo, is he the coach of Steel Valley again?
Yes.
Ray Brazo has coached football for about 136 years, and he takes no guff. There's that. Steel Valley's greatest players in history are Bill Chirpak. Did you know Bill Chirpak played at Steel Valley?
Did not, no.
And Bob Ando, he
good
played
pick.
At Steel Valley. He was a phenomenal. He's Marshall's greatest player ever, and besides Randy Moss. And then Jim Tomsula played at Steel Valley. Oh, yes.
Pretty good defensive coach.
And Charlie Batch.
Yes, and Charlie Batch.
So
I'm
that's
I was
what
wondering
I know
where you bring out Charlie.
This matchup. Steel Valley, let's see. Bruce Gretkowski, Gino Gretkowski, a bunch of people. So that's all of that. Carmen Conley was very good at Seton LaSalle. And so that's what I know. But tell me about this team.
Yeah, so Seton is back in the championship game after being there last year and ultimately lost. So they have Will Martin up front. They have a pretty good team with Tim Storino leading it. Their main goal, I think, is going to try to stop Dayron Barksdale for Steel Valley. So we featured him a couple of times, especially early on in the season at our KDKA Media Day. So they run, like, it's kind of like a Wildcat offense, Colin, where he takes the direct snaps. He'll occasionally throw it, but the offense basically runs through him. And he has the option whether to carry it or throw it. He mainly runs it about 85-90% of the time. So this is going to be a game that is won on the ground. Seton, who last year had Khalil Taylor, and we'll talk about him in the 5A matchup,
right,
doesn't anymore, but they still get back to the championship game.
All right, and then it moves on to whatever that class is with Avonworth and Imani.
Avonworth and Imani, 3A.
3A, what do I know about? Okay, is Leroy Johnson the coach?
Of
Imani.
Imani, I believe so.
He's a good man. I know him. Is Todd Bellinger's son is the quarterback for Avonworth.
Correct.
I graduated Carson. High school with his father. The running back for Avonworth.
Luke O'Neill.
No, the other guy. Or the linebacker, the Greek kid, right? There's a kid with a big Greek last name that's a wrestler. His dad owns Ritter's. Did you know that?
You're talking about Lotzenheiser?
No. That's not Greek. Come on.
I'm not really good okay. with backgrounds of
but
geography.
But anyway, is Carson Bellinger any good? Because his dad was a party animal in high school.
Their team, Colin, and I'm not kidding, might be the best that we saw outside of like Central Catholic all season long and Pine Richland. For a 3A school in Avonworth, we had them for a game when they played against Aliquippa, obviously winning 4A. They pushed Quip around. They are physical up front.
Right.
They were in the championship last year. They're very well disciplined. And whether it's Bellinger, whether it's Neal, whether it's their defense that really stifles up the opposing rushing attack, I've been the most impressed with Avonworth that I've been with any program over the last year or two that's improved in the Whipple.
And Duke Johncourt is their coach, right?
Correct.
Now, before we get to the big game, or the Pine Richland Peters game, I should say, the 5A game or whatever, will that field get chewed up, do you think, Austin? You've covered a lot of football.
It will be chewed up, Colin. Last year, by the time we got to the 5A game, even maybe through halfway through the 3A game, the logo, the Steeler logo, you could see it from up in the press box, it is very hard to see it by the time you get to the 5A game. It becomes very mushy in the field. They do a good job of being able to maintain it, but when you play four games in one day, and hopefully there's no rain or snow, none of that's expected in the forecast, that could further hurt the field. But yeah, there's a reason why they replace it after Whipple championships for Steelers.
Gotcha. Okay, then the 5A game. PR and Peters. I'll tell you what I know here. I watched Peters, I was flipping through. Peters played St. Clair in a game that was like on TV earlier this year.
Regular season game.
Peters had a linebacker that knocked the hell out of everybody on every snap.
Reston Lehman, it might
be. That man,
Four-star going to Pitt.
He looks like once he gets into a college weight room, he's going to put on like 30 pounds and have a gigantic neck. All I know is I watched, it was St. Clair or somebody. He made every tackle. You know who he looked like? He looked like the linebacker that played at Latrobe a couple years ago.
Alex Tash?
He just knocked the hell out of everybody. Yeah. So that's what I know about Peters.
Yeah, he's good.
Who's Peters' coach?
TJ Plack.
TJ Plack?
Yep.
Okay. He's been a coach for a long time.
He has.
Pine Richland. What I know about them is, I know John LaDon.
John LaDon's the coach.
I've known him for
a long
time.
Quick John LaDon story. We did a game in Altoona.
He's a doctor, by the way.
The doctor, yes.
Yes.
We did a game in Altoona. Mm-hmm. He might have needed a doctor because it was 9 degrees on the field. And Dr. LaDon is wearing slides at the coin toss.
Oh, wow.
Nine degrees, he's wearing slides.
That's trying too hard. Do you know where he went to high school?
I don't.
Aliquippa.
It all ties back to Aliquippa. It always does.
So they have him, and then that Ubi is their...
Ubi Schrader is their quarterback.
I do know that about them, and they have the Timmons young man, and then the other kid now that went from Seton to that place.
Khalil Taylor.
Yeah,
so Timmons was just upgraded to a 5-star recruit.
Uh-huh.
He decommitted from Florida State and is now committed to Ohio State. So when Ohio State wants you and you're a 5-star, obviously you're a very talented player. Khalil Taylor still has 1 year left. He decommitted from Penn State. His recruitment is available. They are probably the two most talented outside players that play both wide receiver and corner. anyone in the area. And I don't really know if that's even disputable.
And they have Mac Miller. I know that
yes.
kid. Bob Ando works with his dad. So see this, I know
it,
all this.
It always connects, Colin.
Yes, and and Rob Brown's son was their kicker, but he busted his leg on like the first play of the season against Central. Did you know that?
I did not. You do not see a lot of field goals attempts. Unless no. it's your guy at Fox Chapel, Zurkap.
Yeah.
57-yarder earlier this year.
Best kicker in the country,
by
the
far.
Way.
Going yep. to Georgia for a reason.
So who's going to win the Pine Richland-Peters game?
That is the million-dollar question, because this is a rematch of last year's game. I did pick Pine Richland to win it. Donnie, we were talking about earlier today, ended up picking Peters. It's seriously a coin flip, because Peters, four stars everywhere. Same thing with Pine. I think Pine's just too talented. And they have Peter's number from last year.
Now, my son was telling me, he was like a Whippio connoisseur on the low, that if Pine wins the state championship, they automatically go to 6A, or is it just the Whippio championship?
I think it's if you go to the state championship,
oh, okay.
then they will go and get bumped up to 6A.
Gotcha.
For competitive balance purposes.
Are you excited for tomorrow?
I'm very excited. It's a long day, but it's a fun day, and it's a memorable one.
See, when I covered high school sports, it was only four classes. There weren't six. They were all down there. They started early.
Same day?
Same day, yes. And the thing that I like most is obviously the action. Like Rochester had it going in single A. There was the same teams. Double A was always Aliquippa, you know. And like Springdale was actually good.
Wow.
Riverview. It was neat. But the media conferences after in the press room and the way those kind of communities rally around all those schools and the way that it fills up throughout the day. It's a great experience.
Yeah, I'm sure the crowds will be that way as well. I just remember Fort Cherry's crowd that they had last year. They had flags. They had legitimately for 1A school, they brought out like half the entire community.
Was Mike Vernello and his mustache there?
I did not see the mustache.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, good stuff. We got it covered. So what time does coverage start here on KDK?
So 11 o'clock is the first kickoff, and I believe we might have a little bit of coverage before that, but we are going to be taking it for the 11 o'clock game for 1A, mm-hmm. 2 o'clock game for 2A, 5 o'clock is a 3A game, all leading up to the 5A game at 8 o'clock, and we will be on the air up until probably 11 o'clock talking about it and bringing it all down.
All the way to the Pratt Pack.
Yes. Rob will be taking over in the morning. Yes. You'll still be here in high school football.
Austin, you've done marvelous work. Honestly, I mean that. I listen
Thanks, Colin.
All the time. It's fantastic stuff. Be sure to listen tomorrow. I get gassed up for high school football. I mean it. That's such a great accomplishment that those kids are going to Acrisure and playing in that championship. It's like one of those things you definitely will remember the rest of your life. It's great. Super great stuff. Thank you to Austin for joining me for that. Oh, man. What if people make a light-up night? I should have had a bigger discussion about that during the show, but time was running out. I knew I was going to talk to Jeff. I knew I was going to talk to Austin. There was a lot of stuff to talk about, Mamdani and Trump and all of that sort of stuff, but light-up night. Light-up night's one of those things where you have to weigh this. If you've seen it once, have you always seen it? That's a real question. Like if you went down there one time and checked it out, is that enough? Or should you go every year because it does enough new to where it still excites you? That's a fight that I have in my head. Some people love going down and seeing the Christmas tree be lit. I get that. They like the nativity scene, the creche, all of that. Okay, I understand that. I get it. Sure, fine. Yeah, uh-huh. But in another way, if you've seen it once, you've always seen it. Now, I don't know what the numbers are on Light Up Night. I think they've sustained. I will say this. I wonder if it'll last forever. I don't want to be like Verzella and talk about cold November rain, but I wonder if it'll last forever, and here's why. So many kids now are involved in so many activities all the time. It's not just good enough to play on like one basketball team. They play on 10. It's not good enough to play softball. You have to play softball in the off season. It's not good enough to wrestle. You have to have practice 11 nights a week. All of that I wonder if so many competitive cheer, this, that, the other thing, if it's taken away from those sort of family outings, like light up night, that seems to be something that we have missed with all the stuff that we're involved in. They say get kids involved in stuff. Yeah, sure. and that's good. But one of the flaws that I've noticed as the dad of two 14-year-olds, we get kids involved in activities, but we absolutely overdo it. They have 9 gazillion practices, games, tournaments, this and that, and it's good. But the times now that we gather and spend as families, that's what we've kind of punted on, to have an overexertion of all of those times that are involved in their activities. And the thing, too, is this. There's so many people who buy in and buy in and buy in and buy in and buy in with this, I don't say false hope, but with this thought that there's going to be some payout on the other side. That's the weird part of youth athletics. It just is. But anyway, getting back to Light Up Night. I find Light Up Night to be pretty cool. I do. But Light Up Night does one thing. I will say this. It brings out amateurs that aren't used to being in the Golden Triangle. And those are the people you got to watch out for. The people that stop in the middle of the intersection. The people that are trying to make a left through 9 different lanes of traffic. The people that are just frazzled by traffic in downtown. They all come out. They do that for a bobblehead night here and there, fireworks night for the Pirates, and light up night. You got to kind of be able to snuff those people out and steer clear of them. You got the city rookies and amateurs, and then you got the people who know what they're doing. Stick with the people who know what they're doing. What a great week of shows. It's going to be an even better weekend. Going to be a better week next week when I only got 2 days of work.